For more episodes just like this one on a weekly basis, subscribe to RLRCPSolvers.com. You will not regret it.
Is it Reza loves Robbie or Robbie loves Reza? It's the best palindrome, you will be so impressed. Oh, it's the mathematician and the magician laying out the art of deduction. It's RLR.
Welcome back, Clinical Problem Solvers. I'm a little sad right now.
Sad.
I'm a little sad, but because of our amazing community, I didn't say fans.
Good job.
I didn't say subscribers. I'm learning. You know, I was listening to us in the car and I was thinking, man, we're so funny and smart and handsome. But
you don't sound sad at all, Bro Friends.
Seema, who's our bookkeeper. Seema, I lost my rangefinder. That's worth $250. I'm going to ask for a reimbursement. Don't ask me to itemize it, because then I can't justify it.
Prof Rez, you're not allowed to go to the Ritz-Carlton anymore if you're going to ask for a reimbursement. Prof Rez, tell people what we were up to.
Oh, man. We were recently together in Sonoma. Mm-hmm. Did we already share that?
Remember anything, Prof.
Yeah, because I listened to our episode today, so... Unless you mean what we're up to, like the last 20 minutes, I think they're all caught up, my man.
We were hanging out, Professor. Was that really 20 minutes of hangout? I thought it was like 5. Wow, you're right. It was 20 minutes. See, Professor, this is how I know I love you more than you love me, that RLR stands for Robbie Loves Reza, because I didn't notice it. But you were like 20 minutes.
Maybe I can share a quick reflection. Recently when I was in SF and Robbie and I co-discussed the case in honor of our program director, who now is retired, I just thought how incredible it felt to be on stage with Robbie. Not because of his intellect. It's like over the last decade, a relationship has formed where really the goal is just to have fun, learn, teach. I remember when our relationship started, I always, just like with my older brother, there was always some sense of rivalry or competition, but you know, it's just incredible to not feel an ounce of that, not only on stage, but in the public forum. A huge congratulations to Robbie, who, maybe I can't even share this yet, so I won't share this. You guys will all be aware.
You're congratulating me?
Yeah, for a recognition, which I think I can share, but basically Robbie. I can share that.
Yeah. Robbie, I just realized what you meant, which is how much I view this as a recognition.
Robbie has been invited to discuss NAJM CPC, which is really an incredible honor, because that series, the CPC and the CPS, is really what I think launched Robbie to gravitate towards clinical reasoning. I remember a story you shared in medical school where you were just sitting outside of, I think, Beth's room.
Yes.
And you found a NAJM article and you read the and you're like, oh my gosh. And since then, you haven't put it. And so, yeah, it was just incredible, like, to see you get recognized like that and to be so happy for you.
Thanks,
and very excited for you.
You're unreal. I can't believe you remember Beth's name. That's so cool, man. That's incredible. The UCSF CPS, which is on YouTube, if you guys are interested, you should just it's not on YouTube yet, but probably will be by the time we release this episode. Is really, really cool case, and you'll notice a theme. Prof Rez says it's the dog, and I say it can't be the dog. And the question is, who's right? Is it the dog or not? We'll see.
But by the way, we had other news we wanted to share. Do you want to share the recruitment?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
So, team, we've referred to these wonderful people as the community, people, and now team. And the reason I say team is I think Prof Rez and I have been itching to feel your presence more directly beyond text messages to Prof Rez. And I think we would love, absolutely love, to open the case presenter floor to anyone who is interested in presenting a case. And this idea comes from the intersection of both wanting to spend time with you, but also us having a fantastic time co-discussing Shantanu Rai's case that you all heard. So we would love, love, love if you have a case. And as you know, any case is a good case, even if you want to present a pediatrics case or an OBK, I'm watching Prof. Rez, or obstetrics case. Prof. Rez is turning blue and cyanotic as we speak. But honestly, shoot us an email if you have a case to present, and we will make it happen. We'd love to get to know you, get to understand where you practice medicine, and learn from your case. So shoot us an email if you're down, and let's get to know each other just that little bit better.
Thank you so much. I look forward to co-discussing with you, Robbie, and hearing from our amazing
Team.
team.
Prof. Rez, there's going to be no decode discussion today, and I'm going to put you in the deep end by yourself for this case. And this is 100%. Everything I am going to say today has no Middle Eastern spice. For those of you who understand what I mean, great. But I will just say us Lebanese in particular are prone to hyperbole, as my mom readily demonstrates frequently. So Prof. Rez, remember I told you I was working Thursday night. So this is a fresh case. So, I hate it when I have to do procedures when I'm working solo, Prof. Rez, because as you know, you get sucked into the vortex of having to be focused and doing a procedure, and in the ER, there's all these things that are happening. So, I literally was removing fluid from a patient's knee, and the reason I was removing fluid is she had come in with really bad large knee effusion and had a history of OA, and the effusion was so large. And she had no erythema that I knew it was OA. So I just grabbed a 30 cc syringe, two of them. I grabbed a 21 gauge needle, cleaned it up, and just went and aspirated without any diagnostic tests. And as is almost universally true, you see this light colored fluid that is almost certainly non-infectious. And so I had drained the first 30 cc of syringe, and I was unhooking the syringe to attach the next 30 cc. Who knew how far we were going? And the nurse knocks and opens the door, and they know that they never interrupt a procedure unless there's something important. And he literally says to me, "Hey, doc, this ambulance j came in about 10 minutes ago, and we got labs, and he has a printout of the point of care. You know how the point of care VBG machine gets you a little printout?
Yes.
And it has on it a critical result, and that critical result is a potassium of 7.9. So I literally want you to be in that situation, and I'm really curious both what you're thinking and then what you do as you have a 21 gauge needle in somebody else's knee and draining fluid.
Oh my gosh, and you're alone.
Alone, nobody else, it's just me.
Yes. Well, first of all, you got to really applaud the nurse who interrupted you because there is hyperkalemia and then there is hyperkalemia. And the truth is, when I was an intern, I would overreact to a potassium of 5.6. But since having experienced medicine for a decade, that no longer excites me. But once you start getting close to six and certainly above six, it's very worrisome. And here's the challenge with hyperkalemia, Robbie. There's two challenges. One, many times the potassium may not be truly elevated. So, of course, I'm going to want to repeat the potassium. And I actually might send in the same test tube or like a different test tube an AST as well. Why an AST? Because a common cause of pseudohyperkalemia is lysis of the cells, where it lyses. Not in vivo, but ex vivo. And so it's not true hyperkalemia. And the AST is helpful because then that too will be elevated. Though many times the lab can say, hey, we think this looks like a hemolyzed specimen. But you still have to believe it rather than sort of say, hey, I want to wait for another lab to make sure it's true. Why is that? Because another sneaky part of hyperkalemia is that it may not cause any symptoms whatsoever. And then before you know it, you have torsades, you have VFib, you're in arrest. So what would I do? One is I recognize that I don't know too much about arthrocentesis in terms of the procedure, but I would have to excuse myself. So what I might ask, and I know, we don't want to introduce an infection into the knee. I might do one of two things. Either I remove the needle, or more practically speaking, I ask the nurse or someone to go in the room and hold the needle in place and to make sure that it stays as sanitary as possible while you go and evaluate this other patient. There's another thing, and I would go to evaluate the other patient because I would take this potassium at true value. And the first thing I would do is the following. I would ask another nurse to prepare calcium gluconate, 2 grams, because if it's not hyperkalemia, it's not going to hurt the patient. But what we want to do is we want to stabilize that membrane if it really is hyperkalemia. And then I would ask for an EKG and I would connect the patient to tele. This patient has to be on tele. I would get an EKG. And in the EKG, you're going to be looking for signs of hyperkalemia like peak T waves, et cetera. But remember, you may not see those signs. So I'm really curious to know what you did, but I'm taking this very serious. I'm worried about a sudden cardiac event if it's truly hyperkalemia. Of course, I want to know more about the patient. I'm repeating the test. I'm sending an ASC. I'm giving the calcium gluconate. I'm getting the EKG. I'm putting this patient on tele, and I'm sort of setting up for real significant hyperkalemia. And it's not one of those things where I would say, oh, if it was seven, this guy's rhythm should be off. Like, I don't think that's true at all. I think it could be okay until it's not.
Amazing, Prof. Rez. I'm going to keep the momentum going and tell you that I'm going to tell you two possible scenarios, but only one of them is actually happening. Okay, just to illustrate that the possible scenarios it could be at play. So, what is the test that this nurse Ben got? He's amazing, one of the night nurses that I got to know really well. I actually had never worked with him before. It actually is a full chemate. There are two scenarios, only one of them is true. In one scenario, the creatinine is 0.5. In the other scenario, the creatinine is 9. I'm really curious, how do these scenarios compare and contrast to your response? What do you
You
think?
are such a good teacher, man. Like to bring this up, because it's such an important point. And I was taught this by one of my favorite nephrologists, Manny, who is one of my closest friends. But he said, you know, Reza, if the kidney's functioning well, it's extremely hard to become hyperkalemic. Like almost like an ANA negative lupus. If someone kidney is functioning well, you really shouldn't be hyperkalemic. The only scenario I can see in that is if you just really overwhelm the serum so much that the kidney, even though it's working well, can't get rid of all the extra potassium, like a tumor lysis syndrome, where it's just so much. But otherwise, the kidney is so effective at clearing potassium. So, assuming this is real hyperkalemia, if it's real hyperkalemia, the only scenario that can be true is a creatinine of 9. And most likely it's a patient who is on, well, I don't know. I would think has end-stage renal disease, is on dialysis, may have missed a session. Now I'm just saying stuff, and now has a high potassium and high creatinine. But it's just not, I wouldn't believe a potassium of 9 if the creatinine was 0.5. I just wouldn't believe it. A potassium of 7.9.
Beautiful, absolutely superb. So let me give you the full results, okay, Prof. So the actual scenario in this patient is her sodium is 132. Sorry, no, that's not true. Her sodium is 128. Her potassium is 7.9. Her CO2 is 12. Her pH is 7.21. I forget what her PCO2 is, and her creatinine is 9. Knew that I h had to go address that situation. I actually took the needle out and told the patient, "Hey, unfortunately, I have an emergency." She knew by the nurse coming in and whatnot. And she said, "You know what, doc? You got 30 cc's out. I'm happy. I don't want my discharge paperwork. Thank you. I'm heading out." So she left. In this case, the beautiful part about this case is it's a full circle moment. So we'll come to that full circle in a later on. But so now, Prof. Rez, I had a really interesting dilemma in the moment. I was like, Do I go to the bedside? So you remember this. I was on the non-acute part of the emergency room doing a simple procedure, and the acute side where the patient is all the way over there, and my computer is actually halfway between.
Yes.
So I was deciding, hey, do I go to my computer and put orders in, or do I go and lay eyes on this person? And I'm really curious what you think.
Well, I know what you would do, and I
Yeah.
think what you would do is exactly the right move. Because here's the thing, let's be practical here. If this patient was having, a wide complex tachycardia, VFib, or if they were unresponsive or anything was off that was that significant, the nurse would let you know. And you could even ask the nurse, hey, do they look fine? Are they talking okay? And if that's the case, then these electrolyte derangements are silent killers. They're not overt killers. So you going there is just wasting time. Like, what are you going to do? You're not going to be able to, give calcium gluconate. You're not going to be able to start the, and I want to know her one-liner. Like, I want to know, is this someone that has been living at a high potassium for some time and is a little bit adapted, which would just calm me down, even though I don't know the data behind that? Or is this someone that literally had a normal creatinine and now the potassium is this high? So right now it's time to act. And by the way, the Chem8 really makes me believe this potassium. Why? Because the creatinine is high and then the bicarb is low and the sodium is low. So everything is yelling kidney disease, kidney disease, kidney disease, impaired excretion. So now, not only am I giving the calcium gluconate, the EKG, the tele, but now I'm going through my Ds for potassium management. I can stop here, Robbie, or I can share that if you think it's appropriate.
No, dude, I think that's perfect. So yeah, I'll tell you, I went straight to my computer, because and it just hit me. This is the only time that I can remember, honestly, ProFrez, because usually I have to see the patient first. There's no way that we even get the lab, and it was just this artificial construct of being stuck in another room that made me realize, wow, I can't think of many other situations where I wouldn't want to see the patient first for almost anything.
Can I just say one thing? Where else but RLR will you learn a tidbit like this where it has nothing to do with the, it's just like practical, like, do I go see the patient? Do I go? And then time matters. But where else do they teach this? You know, as great as that NAJM series is, they don't teach it there.
I'll tell him you said that, ProFrez. So I go to the computer and I put the orders in. So would love from te love some teaching for you about what I should put in.
Yes. So these are the D's of managing hyperkalemia. And I would probably go in this order: diuretic. And I'm going to explain my thoughts. Will diuretics work in this patient? No, because this patient's having almost minimal nephron activity. For diuretics to work, they actually have to get in to the nephron, that they have to act on functioning nephrons. And with a creatinine of 9, to get enough diuretics there, Joel Topf taught us this, is that you take 20 times the creatinine. So if you do give this person, it's like 200 of Lasix. This is not, let me give 20 IV Lasix, see what happens. But I don't think diuretic is going to be effective in this patient. Then two, diarrhea. And here really what we're talking about is things that bind up potassium in the intestines. And Robbie, when you and I were in training, the main medication we would use is KX-alate and lactulose. And then we were scared to use KX-alate if there was any kind of GI operation or concept for, I don't know, but let's leave it over there in the environment. That's not an important teaching point. But now we use Lokelma, and Lokelma is very effective. So I'm not really ordering Lasix, but I am ordering Lokelma 10. Right there. Okay. Then the other D is dextrose. And dextrose just reminds me to give insulin. But with this D, you have to be very, very careful, because when someone's creatinine is that high, they're not going to clear the insulin. So if you end up giving insulin, it's a temporary measure of pushing potassium into the cell while the diuretic and the diarrhea are actually excreting potassium, the insulin just mobilizing it to a different compartment. But if you do give insulin, it's really a small amount, and with dextrose, and you got to know what their diabetes status is. I don't know how much of a fan I am of dextrose and insulin, to be quite frank, but it is quite high. So I think it would be appropriate to give you a number. Maybe you give 50 of IV dextrose. And for the trainees out there and attendings, this is not sub-Q insulin we're talking about, because I made that mistake. I've given sub-Q insulin, made a patient hypoglycemic and ended up in the ICU with a coma. So it's IV insulin. So I'm giving 10 of Lokelma. I'm giving 5 of insulin with dextrose. And then, this is not a D, but the inhalers and stuff, I've never given that. I've never prescribed. I don't know how useful that is, to be honest. But then the last D, which I think is what this patient needs, is dialysis. So if you ask the question, why do we dialyze patients? It's when we can't temporize their abnormality with non-dialysis measures. And if someone has acidosis, can we give them bicarb? If they have an elevated potassium, can we bring it down based on what we discussed? If they're volume overloaded, can we diurese? Bottom line is this, Robbie, I'm definitely doing KX-LA. I mean, you could do Lasix, you won't do harm, but I don't think it's going to be effective. Maybe 5 of IV insulin, some dextrose. And then I'm already thinking, should I page nephrology now? But no, let me go see the patient. Let me see, are they volume up? Are there any other signs of this? But I have time. But like, all roads are heading to dialysis for this patient.
Absolutely superb. So we're going to reflect on all of that, really the purpose of this case. So I go to her chart and I see that she is 76. She has end-stage renal disease. She gets dialyzed on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Her medication list includes potassium binders, vitamin D analogs. She's on 80 of Lasix BID. That's really all the relevant stuff. I was sitting there putting the first order I put in is the calcium gluconate. And I saw that on the EDIS board that we have, the track board that we have, it says knee pain, comma, missed dialysis times two. So,
Oh my God.
yeah, so that's the information that I have to work with. And so, I'm curious, Profrez. Yeah, maybe I'll just tell you what I did. So I
Yes.
wrote for 5 units of insulin and 1 amp of D50. And I wrote for 10 of Lokelma. And I wrote for 4 of IV Bumex. I go over and see her. And she tells me that for the last week, she's had really bad right knee pain and swelling. And that's why she missed dialysis on Monday and Wednesday. She couldn't even imagine and fathom going before. She feels fine. And she's really here just because the knee pain got so bad. And she's worried that this is on Thursday night. If she misses another dose of dialysis on Friday, she's going to be in real trouble. So that's why she ultimately came in. She called an ambulance because she couldn't walk. Her knee pain was so bad. Her exam, she has a tunneled dialysis line in her left chest port, which looked fine. Everything else was fine. But she did have a large, swollen, hot right knee. So, yeah, let me leave it at that and see what you're thinking.
Man, it's just incredible how challenging life can be for us humans, our patients. Like, to have to do dialysis 3 times a week, I mean, it's a privilege to be alive, but then to have an additional health problem that prevents you from going there, you could just see how challenging that space is and such. So I really feel for your patient, Robbie. I think now what you have is someone that, like, now I'm going to address the knee. That's very important, but I'm probably prioritizing contacting renal so that this patient, because I think that they're going to need like dialysis sooner than later. Yeah, you'll do your measures, you'll repeat the potassium. But when it's like that high and they miss 2 sessions and you can't do much with the diuretic, et cetera, it seems like it might become more of an urgent rather than, hey, let's wait till the next day when the nephro, I'll call them then. That's sort of my take on that. But with regard to the knee, I would frame this as monoarticular arthritis in a patient with end-stage renal disease who's getting dialysis 3 times a week through a tunneled catheter. I think that's really important. Because when we say monoarticular arthritis, let's keep it very, very simple. When I say chest pain, what are three diagnoses that you want to rule out? If you're driving your car, if you're jogging, if you're in the bathroom, we want you to think, what are those three diagnoses? If you ask me, Robbie, I say ACS, PE, and dissection right away. When we say someone has an inflamed joint, what are the top two diagnostic considerations that we want to rule out? A septic joint and a crystalline joint. And I think, of course, you'll ask about trauma, but I think in a patient with a tunneled line and immunocompromised from the diabetes, I would be worried, could this represent septic arthritis? With regard to a crystalline joint, it is true that, end-stage renal disease is a risk factor for flares of gout and such. So I'd be curious what the history is, if she has a history of gout. And if she does, and it presented in her knee, then I think some would argue that, and I'm not sure, and I would love to know your answer to this, that you can just treat it empirically as opposed to like putting them through the ringer. So what's going to happen next is I think maybe you can tell us the history, if there was any prior episodes. If not, then it's drainage, it's cell count and diff, it's Gram stain, it's crystalline analysis, and it's empiric antibiotics.
Yeah, beautiful, absolutely beautiful process. I'll tell you the next friction point that happened when I was examining her is real life. So Ben comes up to me, he's like, "Doc, five orders? What do you want me to do first?" I swear to God. So you got the calcium, you got the insulin, you got the dextrose, you got the Bubex, and you got the Lokelma. Five. I remember he went like this, "Five orders, Doc? What am I supposed to do?" And end stage renal, she only has one really flimsy line in her right upper extremity. Like it's not great,
Oh my God.
So what do you do
All right,
first?
I'm doing the calcium gluconate, then I'm doing the insulin, but I'm saying, hey, can you also do the KX, the Lokelma simultaneously?
You don't need the line for that.
Yeah, and then I'm not too worried, honestly, about the Bumex. I just don't think she's gonna. I would still give it whenever it's given. And what was the fifth one?
The fifth one was a dextrose.
A dextrose. Oh yeah. So I'm probably doing IV insulin. I'm sorry, because I've been burned before. I'm doing dextrose, then the IV insulin because I think that's very, very quick. I mean, what's quicker than something that gets
Quick.
bioavailable? And then I'm doing. I've never been asked this question. Then I'm gonna be like, hey, let's do the Lokelma, and then whatever you want from there.
Yeah, beautiful. So you hand the patient the responsibility of taking the Lokelma. You give the calcium first, then the dextrose, then the insulin, then the Bumex. Perfect.
Wow.
Okay, so let's do some nerding out. Okay, Profres.
All right.
Can you imagine a scenario where you ever give somebody insulin and dextrose and not give them calcium?
Oh, wow. You give them insulin and dextrose, but
For hyperkalemia, just to be clear, we're talking
oh,
about everything.
okay. Oh, no, I can't.
So the idea is that like insulin and dextrose is a temporary parking situation in the cells to save your patient from catastrophe. It has high risks of hypoglycemia. And if you were think your patient is in such extremis that they need that, they need to be stabilized and given calcium to stabilize their cardiac membrane right away, right? Okay, beautiful. Profrez, have you ever given Lokelma or diuretic without giving calcium gluconate?
No.
Is the premise the same that you would never?
Oh, and sorry, this is for like hyperkalemia.
For hyperkalemia. Like,
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
would
No,
you
I was
ever
just
give
yeah. No,
diuretic?
I definitely have. I definitely have. Like I've had patients, for example, Robbie, with a potassium of 5-6. They don't have end-stage renal disease. They have CKD, and they might be on. I've given them an additional dose of their Lokelma to bring their potassium down to the 5.1. So I absolutely have given Lokelma. With regard to diuretic, yeah, like if that's more difficult. Lokelma, I have. Diuretic, I don't think I have, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think if I were to venture what happens in a clinician's mind when they have hyperkalemia proper is if you can fix the underlying issue right away,
Yes.
you have to address the underlying issue in every single patient
Yes.
because temporary stabilization of the cardiac membrane, temporary diversion of of potassium into the cells, or what may be called blind elimination are actually supportive measures. All these things, blind elimination with diuretic or Lokelma, stabilization of the cardiac membrane, and insulin are all supportive treatment. And in any condition in the world, you always want to do targeted treatment before you do supportive treatment. So the reason that you and I are not discussing a targeted treatment in this situation is initially is because we can't do anything about the kidney. But I just want to call attention to the fact, Prof, as you prioritize dialysis to this patient. So you know that you really need to treat the reason why this potassium is building up in the first place. So I'd encourage all of you to think about hyperkalemia. The focus has to be on why is this happening, and we need to do something about that right away. So definitive treatment of the actual underlying issue, which in this case, unfortunately, is dialysis. And supportive care really follows. And I think that all of supportive care is really return on investment versus risk. And the return on investment of Lasix and Lokelma versus risk is usually pretty decent. The return on investment versus risk of insulin and D50 is questionable, as you already said. So my order, Prof. Rez, is in every single patient, I will always do targeted treatment, treat the underlying issue. And then my order is exactly the same as yours. Targeted treatment, and then blind elimination, just blindly get it out of the body with diuretic or with Lokelma, then stabilize the cardiac membrane, then insulin and D50. I never found myself not going in that order. And I say all this because that's the schema I'm going to share with you all for this episode. So take a look at it and study it and watch what Prof. Rez did. First thing he said is dialysis. And he's never going to use insulin and D50 without using calcium. And he's never going to use calcium without doing some kind of elimination therapy. It would make no point to give calcium and not eliminate the potassium in some way, shape, or form. So these things get really, really complicated, but hopefully the visual that we'll share with you on the website can make it very easy. So, Prof. Rez, I called Reno, and Reno called me back and said, "Yeah, let's." It was 2 a.m., 1:30 a.m. By the time they called me back, I had to pay them three times because they were sound asleep. It was 2 a.m., and we had given all the interventions, and by 3 a.m., Prof. Rez, after all those interventions, I'd love to gut check you and take a guess. What do you think her repeat potassium came back after those? All she finally got all those five things. What
Yeah.
was her repeat potassium, you think?
Awesome. And she was at what, 7.9?
7.9.
Oh my gosh, that's so high. All right, I'm gonna give you a range. I'm gonna say between 6.5 and 7.
Dude, it was unreal. She was 5'4".
5.4.
5.4. And by the way, the first thing I did was I doubted that, but her point of care and her upstairs proper lab were the same number. She went to
Wow.
5.4. Amazing, right? Yeah, I
Yeah, so
was.
was this before you talked to the
No,
nephrologist?
no, 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 no. I called the nephrologist right away while she was getting all these things. And
Yeah.
he said, "Hey, let's, as soon as you do all these things, recheck it. And then I'll decide whether we'll dialyze right now or
Wow.
wait till 6 a.m., the first regular shift."
Yeah, right.
So she was able to wait 4 hours because her repeat potassium.
Yeah. Wow.
So these things can be effective, man. They really can. In sum total, we went bananas. We literally gave her everything we could, right?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did she make any urine, Robbie?
She does.
She
And
does.
that's
When
why she's
you
given
okay.
her Lasix. But she had not peed at all.
Not peed at all.
She had not. But well, I don't know. Maybe she definitely maybe had some in her bladder, but she hadn't expelled
Yeah.
out of her bladder.
Dude, that's so fascinating on how effective. But that being said, you still had to call the nephrologist because
Oh,
what
for
if that
sure.
repeat potassium was
Exactly.
6, like I would have predicted? Then it's like you've lost that time to prepare them to anticipate the need. So I don't think that negates
Yeah.
the initial call and then just simultaneously working with them in parallel.
Beautiful. So tap her knee and get a 30 cc syringe with a 1.5 gauge needle, Prof. Rez.
Yeah.
And I go into her knee. And I'm removing the fluid. And then Ben walks in the middle of the procedure, and he says, "Ha, gotcha, doc. Nothing. Everything's fine. Don't worry." There's no, I swear to God, he was so mean. I was like, I'm gonna kill this guy. She had gout in her knee. Long story short, I know we've talked quite a bit. And so her outcome was she was given an intra-articular steroid injection for her gout, and then she was dialyzed the next day. And I haven't checked her chart today. I imagine she'll be going home soon.
Rob, when you acerated
Yeah.
because she had no fever, no inflammation, you didn't give like antibiotic. You just waited for the lab to read if there's crystals or not.
Yeah, Prophrez, I think ultimately it depends on what joint is involved, but
Yes.
you can do an arthrocentesis. You will have your results in 30 minutes,
At
right?
the VA. Oh, wow. Oh, my
You know, like
goodness.
it's
Okay.
really
It's like
fast.
automated.
Yeah, it's just like think about it, just like an empyema, right? Like
Wow.
if you can draw out the fluid and send it up to
Yeah.
the lab, or SVP treatment, right? You always
Yes.
send me the tell me the neutrophils and the diff, and then I'll give the ceftriaxone.
Yes.
We treat accessible joints just like that.
Wow. So you drew 30, then the lab told you, and then you went and injected the zero.
Exactly.
Dude, you're what did Shantanu say? Not all heroes wear capes. Look at you at the 2 a.m. injecting.
Oh
How
man.
cool is that? You
I'll
like,
have to. Okay, can I be real with all of you?
yeah.
So we got the diagnosis, and I slept for 2 hours, and then I woke up and injected her knee. I couldn't do it. I didn't do it right away. I had to get a nap in. So I think a real
Right,
hero
we're
would have.
removing that cape. Oh, I guess all heroes do
Yeah,
wear a
exactly. That I don't
cape.
deserve that. A real hero would have injected the knee, then nap. But I was like, I can't do this. I had such a bad
Sanjay
headache.
Patel would have done
100%.
that.
Yeah, thanks for all that teaching, Prof. Rez. I think we don't talk about the management of hyper K, and it evolved in such a illuminating way. So thank you. That was a lot
Well,
of fun.
man, this is such a good episode. Like, I'm gonna study this. I'm gonna look at your visual. I'll make a video, but it's so applicable to like my daily practice.
I
So
know,
thank you
right?
for bringing this case,
For
man.
sure.
Really, really good.
For sure. Do-do-do.
That's a wrap, folks.